Stand by, Terry Saul Show. 5, roll tape. 4, cue Terry. 3, bring audio up. 2, stand by. 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host and I am so glad that you joined us this morning. Today's special guest is Destiny Schuster. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay. That last name just kind of throws me a little bit there. She is the founding patient support services. You founded patient support services, right?
Correct.
After a 10-year career with the Social Security Administration, working in various fields, what'd you do for them?
I started as a claims representative and specialized in the Supplemental Security Income Disability Program.
What is that?
That's the needs-based program that is set aside for providing people with limited income and limited resources monthly
cash benefits.
People
that work in radio.
What?
People that work in radio, limited income. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they also need to be disabled or over 65. So, sorry, I don't think you'll qualify, Terry.
Okay, well, we're getting there. I'm almost 65. How long did you do that?
Well, I started at as a claims representative in 2003. In 2006, I got promoted to a supervisor. In 2010, I started managing the Social Security office in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
And beautiful area up there. Isn't that gorgeous up there?
Oh, yes. I loved it.
And yeah, beautiful area.
The people up there were amazing.
Really?
Yes. I had some wonderful coworkers.
Yeah.
They work hard. But then I had an opportunity to transfer over to Oregon, and I finished up the last part of my 10 years at the Salem Social Security office.
Are you originally from this area? Or?
I am. Yeah. Born and raised. Went to Jervis High School. Oregon State University graduate.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're a mom?
I am a mom. I have 2 children.
How old are they?
16-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter.
Oh, the 16-year-old is just getting started on you, right?
Oh, yes. We're teaching him to drive a manual transmission vehicle now.
Manual. They still have those, right?
I do.
That's how I learned. I had an old Volkswagen Bug. That's how I learned on it. Yeah. Is that a lot of fun teaching him how to drive that?
I'm not sure I would say it's fun. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's good. All right. So what are you doing now?
So now I own and operate Patient Support Services USA. Our mission.
What is that?
We just help people with disabilities through the Social Security disability application process. And we help people with their Medicare options once they're eligible for Medicare. We do it with compassion and we do it as a partnership.
I'm going to put you to work right now.
Okay.
I am 64 years old.
Mm-hmm.
In July, I turned 65. Do I need to sign up for Medicare?
You need to sign up for Medicare about 3 months before you turn 65. So
in July, I turned 65. Where are we at now? April, March, or something like that?
April.
All right, so I should probably, how is Medicare going to help me?
Well, Medicare is going to help with your medical bills. So there's several parts to Medicare. Medicare Part A is hospital insurance. So what that means is it'll pay for your room and board while you're in the hospital after you've met the deductible. Then there is Part B, which is your medical insurance, and that helps pay for your doctor's visits. It pays about 80% for your Medicare-covered doctor's visits, and then you're responsible for 20% after that. And then there's Medicare Part D that helps with your prescription drug coverage. As you can tell, I skipped C, A, B, and D, and skip C. C is where you can get a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare supplement plan that helps fills the gaps in Medicare. Like I said, on Medicare Part B, Medicare only pays 80% of your medical bills. And as you well know, medical bills can be so high that 20%, 20% doesn't sound like a lot until you have a $100,000 bill.
Yeah.
And so I help people look at what their Medicare supplement options and Medicare Advantage plan options are and help them fill in those gaps to minimize risk.
My wife is 7 years younger than I am, and she likes to bring that up often. but she's still working and has insurance, which covers me. Mm-hmm. And I'm on a lot of prescription drugs right now. Thank goodness for that insurance because I'd be paying, we figured out about $4,000 a month if I did not have to, or could not rely on my insurance. insurance to cover it. I'm covered with my wife's plan. Do I still need to consider Medicare, or will they not even allow me to qualify for it?
As long as your wife's plan is as good as what Medicare can offer, you can stay with your wife's plan, and then you'll need to apply for Medicare
down the road.
Down the road, when she either leaves employment or loses that coverage, or that coverage is no longer as good as what Medicare offers.
Can you have both, or is that something you don't want to have?
No, you can absolutely have both. You can have Medicare and your private plan. Medicare will typically pay first, and then the private plan will fill in the gap.
Okay, so how would this work, Destiny? If, let's just say for grins here, I've got $1,000 of prescription a month, and my wife's covering $800 of it. Will Medicare jump in there and cover the first $800, and then Patty's insurance can cover the rest?
I'm not sure. I would really have to look at your specific situation.
I'm trying to get away with not paying a dime,
yeah,
is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, you're not going to get that good.
Okay.
No.
All right. So people that are getting close to 65, if they don't have insurance, they should check the Medicare into the Medicare, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. What does it cost?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know if I have the exact numbers for 2020. It's right around $145 for your Medicare Part B.
A month. Okay. Mm-hmm. Does it increase if the older you get, or does it stay the same? Or?
Well, if you don't apply for it when you're first eligible, or if you don't have credible coverage, you will have to pay a penalty of 1% per month for every month that you could have had coverage and you didn't have coverage. And that applies for your Medicare Part B and your Medicare Part D.
But if my wife has coverage for me and I decide, you know, she's going to work another 5 or 6 years, and then at that point, I want to go into Medicare. Are they going to penalize me for the back time here?
No, as long as you can prove that you had credible coverage.
Got it. Okay. We just drifted off from my list of questions. I apologize for that.
That's
but
okay.
Disability benefits, SSDI, SSI. Come on. These are all just a bunch of letters on the alphabet here. What's the difference between this stuff? What do they mean?
That's a good question. So SSDI and SSI are both disability benefit programs. SSDI stands for Social Security Disability Insurance, and SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income. These are both programs that are administered by the Social Security Administration, and as far as the disability benefits they offer, they use the same medical rules to determine if an individual meets Social Security's definition of disability. Where these programs differ is in the non-medical rules. In order to qualify for SSDI, an individual must have insured status, meaning that they must have earned at least 20 work credits in the 10 years prior to becoming disabled.
What's a work credit?
A work credit is, I don't have with me the amount.
Okay.
It's around $1,000.
Okay.
So you have to get 4 of those in a year. You can get up to 4 in a year. You can get 20 credits in the last 10 years, which means you've worked basically 5 out of the last 10 years before being disabled.
Okay.
And the amount that you receive is based solely on the amount of payroll taxes that you've paid into the system. As the name implies, Social Security Disability Insurance, it is a federal government insurance program. The average disabled individual benefits currently is $1,258. That's the average. Now, SSI, on the other hand, is a needs-based program for the disabled and the aged. In order to qualify for SSI under the non-medical rules, an individual must have limited income and limited resources. If you are over 65, you do not need to be disabled to qualify for the program. However, anyone under 65 must be disabled in addition to meeting the income and resource criteria. And the most that a person can receive on SSI each month is $783.
Why the difference?
Why the difference in...
From the 783 from the original 1258.
Okay, so the 1258 is based on what you've paid in. Like I said, that's just an average. So everybody who gets disability gets a different amount, and it's a formula that's dependent on how much you've paid into the program.
Got it.
SSI is more like it's a government safety net for people who haven't worked enough to qualify. It's to help keep people out of poverty. And they just have the limit for 2020 is set at $783 a month. And the amount that you can get is actually a sliding scale, because you can still work and receive SSI benefits. But the more you work, the lesser your benefit amount is going to be.
What about with the SSI or SSDI, the disability? Can you work for that too?
You can work and still receive your SSDI benefits.
Why? Why are they allowed? I mean, isn't that what the whole purpose of collecting that is? Because you're disabled and you mm-hmm. can't work?
SSA's definition of a disabled individual is anybody with a physical or mental impairment or combination of the two who are unable to work at a substantial level for 12 months or longer. The key is substantial level, and Social Security defines substantial as $1,260 a month. So if you cannot work, you can be disabled and work a little bit, you could earn $1,000 a month. But if you can't earn $1,260, you can still be considered disabled and you can still continue working while receiving disability benefits as long as it's not over that threshold.
How do they monitor that? I know I have a distant uncle that applied was turned down, applied and turned down, and finally he got it. And we're still trying to figure out what's wrong with him, why he can't work. And it just seems like it's because he's lazy and doesn't want to work and would rather have you and me pay for it. Yep. How do they monitor that, or do they?
Well, every time that someone gets approved for disability benefits, the Social Security Administration puts a tickle on their record for 1 year, 3 year, or 7 years. So depending on the nature of their disability, Social Security is going to review that every so often. Again, 1, 3, or 7 years, depending on the nature of the disability. And of course, you have to have medical evidence to substantiate your claim. So in the situation of your uncle, there's got to be some medical evidence there somewhere that substantiates the claim. And there's a lot of hidden disabilities. You know, you've got to keep that in mind. There's a lot of hidden disabilities.
Like what?
Like mental health disabilities.
Okay.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. Depression can be very hidden. People can hide that very, very well.
Why would you want to hide that? If you're applying for it, why would you want to hide that? Wouldn't that help case if you're trying to get it?
Well, they hide it to the general public.
Got it.
They don't want you to know about their struggles, but they might be seeing a psychiatrist regularly and you have no idea. But the psychiatrist can provide the medical evidence to show that this person really cannot handle the stresses of a 8-hour-a-day, 5-day-a-week job, and therefore they qualify for disability benefits.
What about something that's like going on right now with this crazy virus that's running around the world? That's stressing a lot of people out. Maybe a lot of people feel that, you know what, I can't go in there and put an 8-hour day in right now because I'm too busy worried about this virus.
Mm-hmm. Again, the disability has to last for 12 months or
longer. Got it. We have a couple minutes left on this segment. Are the benefits the same for U.S. citizens as opposed to non-U.S. citizens?
Well, the benefits are the same. However, aliens to the United States have some additional requirements that they must meet in order to qualify. In order to qualify for SSI, an alien must be considered a qualified alien. And there are 7 categories of qualified aliens. The 2 that I ran across the most when I worked at Social Security were lawfully admitted permanent residents, and the 2nd is refugees. Lawfully admitted permanent residents can qualify for SSI if they have 40 work credits, or work done by your spouse or parent may also qualify towards the 40 work credits, but only for the purpose of getting SSI. The 2nd most common that I ran across too while working for SSI is refugees, and refugees may qualify to receive SSI for a maximum of 7 years from the date the Department of Homeland Security granted them refugee status. It is also important to note that if you were sponsored to enter the United States, the Social Security Administration will count your sponsor's income and resources as your income and resources.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about who and when folks should apply for Social Security disability. We'll do that when we come back. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Hey, don't go anywhere. We're chatting today with Destiny Schuster. I'm going to get it.
German.
She is a Patient Support Services USA, and we'll be chatting a little bit more when we come back.
A good neighbor, State Farm is there. Shopping for car insurance? Get the very best coverage with State Farm agent Teresa Lule in Salem. State Farm keeps you and your family covered with great auto insurance. That's also a great value. Visit online at teresalule.com or on Facebook. Better yet, stop in the offices at 890 Commercial Street Southeast in Salem or call 503-378-1100.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1. You're on.
Welcome back to the Terry Salt Weekend Show. We are talking today with Destiny Schuster. I got it right?
Yes, you did. Good job.
She is from Patient Support Services, and they help you with your pre-screening process to save you time, easy scheduling for your different appointments there. Who and when should apply for Social Security disability?
Anyone unable to perform substantial work activity due to a physical or mental impairment or a combination of the two might be eligible for Social Security disability and or supplemental security income benefits and should apply right away. Individuals under full retirement age who are receiving Social Security retirement benefits may be entitled to a higher monthly benefit and Medicare under SSDI if they subsequently become disabled. For full retirement age, if you were born between 1943 and 1954, your full retirement age is 66. Full retirement age increases gradually to 67 for those born in 1960 or later. If you are currently receiving retirement benefits and are under your full retirement age and you are unable to work at a substantial level, you should consider applying for disability benefits.
Say that again.
If you are retired,
right,
but you haven't yet reached your full retirement age. So let's say you retire at the age of 62.
Which I did.
Okay. So you retire at 62. And let's say when you turn 63, you become disabled.
Okay.
So many people think, well, I'm already retired. I don't need to file for disability benefits. They don't realize that by losing the opportunity to go back to work because of your disability, just by losing that opportunity, you can increase your disability benefit amount by up to 30%.
Really?
Yes. Because when you take early retirement at age 62, if you're full
62 and a half.
Okay. Well, it's going to be somewhere between 30% and 25% of a deduction that you took. You can make up for that deduction by getting disability benefits if you meet the medical criteria for being a disabled individual.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people when they retire and then become disabled, they don't even think about it because, well, they're fine, they're retired. But 30% is a huge difference.
I helped
a lady last year. Her only income was her retirement. She was getting $1,500 a month, and that's all she lived on. And we were able to get her increased to $1,700 a month.
Oh, nice.
I mean, that's nice. $200 for someone who's only making $1,500 a month. It was huge to help her out. Plus, it got her the Medicare benefits early, because when you're disabled for 24 months, you're eligible for Medicare. It doesn't matter how old you are. And so getting those additional healthcare benefits is a real godsend for some people.
So a 45-year-old can qualify for Medicare benefits?
That's correct, as long as they've been on disability for 24 months or longer. Now, this is just for Social Security disability. It's not for people that are on SSI. But if you're on Social Security disability, the program where you've paid taxes into, once you've been disabled and receiving disability benefit checks for 24 months, you're eligible for Medicare.
24 months could be a long time, though, too, couldn't it?
Yes, and unfortunately, it can take the Social Security Administration 24 months to even decide your case, depending on how
long. Why is that?
Because it's all the appeal processes. So if someone starts at filing their initial claim, that process in and of itself can easily take 7 months just to get your initial claim decided. Then if you get denied, you file an appeal, which is a request for reconsideration. and that can easily take another 7 months. Then, if that gets denied, you can appeal to an administrative law judge, and that takes generally 15 months. So you're already at 29 months if you're one of the unlucky people that it takes 7 months at the initial, 7 months for reconsideration, and then a full 15 months.
Why does it take so long? Is it because of the caseload?
It is because of the caseload, particularly in Oregon. There is very big backlog. In fact, the Oregon Disability Determination Services, which is the state agency that makes the decision for the Social Security Administration on whether or not they meet the disability requirements, the state agency is so far behind right now that they are actually having to send some of their cases out of state. I've had a couple of my clients' cases. Yeah, I've had them go to Baltimore for review, and I just had one recently go to Little Rock, Arkansas for review because Oregon is just so far behind right now.
Why can't they just hire more people? Money? Is that the reason?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's you know, above my pay grade.
Wow, that's crazy there. Mm-hmm. And aren't most people denied right off the bat?
I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't, but I will.
You know, part of why people are denied right away might be that their disability is new. And they know that they're going to be disabled for over 12 months. They know the direction that they're going. But the medical records may not reflect it. There just might not be enough medical records. The other reason that people might be disabled is because, or might not be approved right away, is because when they're first becoming disabled, they might still be able to go to work and earn $1,260 a month, which is hard for people who are used to making $5,000 a month to accept that I'm not disabled if I can still do $1,260 a month. But as their condition progresses, then Social Security can see more clearly that, yes, they are eligible for disability benefits and they can get disability. The other thing that I've learned over the years is at the Disability Determination Services, they have their set rules and guidelines that the Social Security Administration has set for them. And so if your medical condition and the medical records don't fit in exactly into one of these perfect little boxes, the impairments are in what's called the blue book. And so you can look up your impairment in the blue book or online and see, does my disability meet this impairment? And there are a lot of impairments that are disabling that aren't in the blue book. And so it's really hard.
Like what?
The other day I had somebody, Chiari malformation.
Say that again?
Chiari malformation.
Sure you do. Okay.
I'm not going to do a very good job of describing it, but it's where the base of the skull is malformed, and I'm not doing it justice. I can't even describe it very well, but it causes a lot of symptoms that are similar to seizures. And we were able to win her case by comparing the symptoms of Chiari malformation to symptoms people with seizures experience, and that's how we won the case. But we didn't win it right away, and the reason why we didn't win it right away at the first initial claim was because Chiari malformation is not a disabling condition listed in the blue book. So when I appealed it at the reconsideration level, I laid out everything about Chiari malformation and I compared that to seizures. And then the Disability Determination Service was able to see that and say, oh, yes, this really does equal a medical listing, and it is as severe as these others. Sometimes it takes going before a judge, because a judge can look at all of the medical information. And I like to say that, you know, a lot of times the judges bring common sense to the table. And so if you have a disability that doesn't fit perfectly inside the box, they can look at common sense. Like I had an individual the other day who didn't qualify by 0.04 on one of his testings, and we were able to get him to qualify by presenting it to the judge that this is such a small number that he was over it by that he should still qualify.
We need to take a short break. Back in just a moment.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back. This is The Terry Saul Weekend Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and today we're talking to the owner and manager of the Patient Support Services. I wanted to say system, Destiny Schuster. We were talking on our last break about who and when they should apply for the Social Security disability. What is the substantial level? What is that all about?
So substantial level is how Social Security measures someone's ability to work. So you have to have a physical or mental impairment that prevents you from working at a substantial level for 12 months or longer in order to qualify for Social Security disability. Social Security recognizes that a lot of people with disabilities are still able of performing some type of work in the economy and allows them to do so as long as their ability doesn't go beyond $1,260 a month if you're not blind. If you're blind, you can actually earn $2,110 a month. Yeah. So it's different. The rules are also different for people who are self-employed. So if you're self-employed, work activity is evaluated by looking at three tests. The first is significant services and substantial income, where Social Security evaluates the individual's work activity. If he or she renders services that are significant to the operation of the business, their work is going to be considered substantial. And the way that they measure significant services is by the number of hours that you put into your self-employment. So if you're putting in 46 hours or more a month then into self-employment, you're not going to be considered disabled. Also, if you receive a substantial income from your business, just like that $1,260 a month that I already mentioned, or $2,110 a month, if you're blind, you're not going to be considered disabled. The second test is the comparability test. Social Security looks at your job duties, your skills, your efficiency, the time that you put in, the energy you spend working to determine if the work you do is comparable to that of an unimpaired person in your community whose business is similar to yours. If your work is comparable, then your work is considered substantial, regardless of how much you're able to make from your employment, which makes sense if you think about it, because just because you're self-employed doesn't mean that you're successful. And if you're working even 40 hours a month and you're not able to make $1,260, that just might be because you're doing it wrong. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're disabled.
Right.
So the Social Security compares what you're doing to that of other people who have similar businesses. And if they're able to make substantial level of income, then maybe you would be able to too. And it's not because of your disability. The third test that they look at is the worth of work. So they look at the value of what you do for your business, and your work is considered substantial if the value of your work is worth more than $1,260 a month compared to what it would cost you to hire someone else to do your job.
What if your work is not a set amount per month? What if one month it could be the $1,260, the next month it could be $1,500, the next month it could be $800? It just changes monthly. Does that?
Social Security will average it over the whole year.
Okay.
And they'll also look at the hours that you're putting into it as well.
So working 40 hours a month, pretty easy to do.
Correct.
That's not a tough one to accomplish.
No, it's not.
So if I wanted to apply for disability benefits, how would I do that?
It's a good question. You have a couple of options. First, you can work with an advocate such as myself who will walk you through the entire process and assist you with filing the correct paperwork and tracking your claim as it goes through the application process, which, as I mentioned before, generally takes about 7 months. An advocate will also help you with your appeal should your case be denied. Your second option is to contact the Social Security Administration directly to file your application. Most Social Security disability insurance applications can be filed online at www.ssa.gov. So that's the abbreviation for Social Security Administration.gov. Mm-hmm. But your SSI applications must be completed by making an appointment with the Social Security Administration.
What do they go through during that appointment?
So during the appointment, your Social Security is going to ask you the same questions that an advocate would ask you. Who have you seen? Who are your medical providers? When did you first start seeing that provider? When did you last see that provider? When are you going to next see the provider? Has that provider provided you with any medical testing, blood testing, MRIs, CT scans, echocardiograms, any sort of medical testing? We need to know about it. They're going to ask, if you're applying for SSI as well, they're going to ask about your current income and your current resources. And they're going to ask, who are you living with? Who's paying your rent? Or are you buying? Because it's a needs-based program, they'll ask all sorts of information about your household.
I mean, it's just you and me talking here. No one's. I know what my ratings are. No one's listening. Are they looking to bounce you out of there, or are they looking to try to help you?
At the Social Security employees?
Yes. Are they looking to, like, gotcha?
I don't think so. You know, the Social Security Administration is made up of intelligent individuals that were hired from our community. And as you live and work in your community, there are people who naturally are more helpful than others. And so it's kind of the luck of the draw of who you get at the Social Security Administration. You could have a claims representative working with you that is incredibly, incredibly helpful, but maybe they're not very good at following up on their tickles and keeping track of the claim. Or you could have somebody who just does the bare minimum to push you through to get the next person in line processed. I would say overall, the Social Security Administration is made up of very intelligent, very helpful employees that really want to do their best by you. I do think that they are overworked, that the backlogs do have them feeling a little pressured for time and trying to keep things short with you on the phone. One thing that I don't like is that Social Security does advertise that if you need help completing the forms, they will help you, like supplement forms like work history reports and function reports that come along after you file the initial claim. But that's really not true. The Social Security Administration does not have the time to sit down with each applicant and help them with their work history report or their function report. They'll encourage you to find a friend or a family member to help you with it because they just don't have the time. But they will help you with your initial application, of course. But then once that application is filed, anything subsequent that they need is really up to you. And that's where another place where an advocate can really come in handy.
When I applied for retirement at 62, early retirement, obviously, I went online and did it online. And I was surprised just how easy it was to fill out all the information. And then I had to go down there and meet with somebody. And if I remember right, I was in and out within about 30 minutes. And the gentleman that I spoke to was very polite, very knowledgeable of what he was doing, answered my questions. That was it. I was done. And then all of a sudden that first check came in and I thought, well, I did it. I mean, it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
It wasn't a rough experience.
No.
And
it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be.
But that's for retirement.
I say retirement and disability is very different.
Because you're going for, come on, guys, I'm hurt or I'm disabled or something. I need the money.
Right. And so you're going through a lot of life changes. It's a difficult time for you. You have to wait. And Social Security is going to continue to ask you for additional information. And you have to give them time to get your medical records and to make a decision. And it's a difficult process. Not because the Social Security Administration makes it difficult, because I don't think that they do, but because of what you're going through in your life.
How are they qualified to make a medical decision? Are there doctors on staff that say, hey, you know what? Okay, I understand what this guy's going through or whatever. Or is it just somebody that says, nah, I never heard of that one before. I can do it.
So the Disability Determination Services have disability adjudicators that put together the claim. And then they have their doctors that have to review it and sign off on it.
What is the biggest mistake that people make before in the process of an application?
Well, lately, one big mistake that I've been seeing more frequently is individuals not obtaining regular medical treatment. And sometimes people reach the point of just pure frustration with their medical condition and they give up. So they don't go into the doctor when they have an episode or a flare-up because they don't believe there's anything the doctor can do for them. I'm kind of thinking of a client that I have right now that has seizures quite regularly. And, you know, he had a big one the other day and I encouraged him to go to the doctor. But, you know, his response was, there's nothing they could do for me. And while that may be true, they may not be able to do anything, but they can document it and have it in the medical records. And that will just help substantiate what you're telling Social Security so that you can get approved for disability benefits. I mean, his claim is still pending, so we'll wait and see what happens to him. For some people, the frequency of going into the doctor, when you have like flare-ups, like people who have migraine headaches, for example, and they get headaches almost every day, well, they really can't go into the doctor all the time. But it is helpful if they would keep a diary of when the headache or when the migraine started, how long it lasted for, what you were doing just before the headache, or what were you able to do to help relieve it, if anything. And if they keep the diary and then just take the diary with them to the doctor and ask the doctor to add it to the medical records, that can also help the claim. And sometimes I have some of my clients that I work with that I have them keep the diaries and we just send it directly to the Disability Determination Services. They don't necessarily have to go and be part of the medical record. But if you're considering applying for disability and you haven't quite done so yet, I would consider if you have something that's a continual problem like seizures, headaches, migraines, that you don't go to the doctor for every time, please keep record of it and take it to the doctor to have it added to your medical records. It can really help your claim.
So what's the biggest mistake you see?
Biggest mistake I see is just people not keeping Social Security updated with medical changes, new diagnoses, or, you know, if someone goes and gets an MRI and then they forget to contact Social Security and let them know, hey, I filed an application 2 months ago. I just need to update it to let you know that I had an MRI done last week. Because otherwise, they may or may not get that medical records because you applied 2 months ago and they may already have collected the medical records from that provider where you got the MRI, and you need to tell them to request those medical records again.
So do they want you calling them every other day and saying, okay, I've been to the doctor and they do blood today and tomorrow they're going to do an MRI and the next day they're going to give me a shot or whatever? Do they want you doing that?
It's better to compile the information. So if you know stuff is coming up, just I would say hold on for just a reasonable amount of time, a couple of weeks, make some notes, and you can, and you wouldn't necessarily contact Social Security. You would contact the Disability Determination Services.
You can do that online, can't you?
No, you cannot. You have to do it over the phone or via fax. And if you have an advocate, then you just give that information to your advocate, and you could give it to your advocate as frequently as you want. Advocates love hearing from their clients because they want to keep the file up to date. You could use your advocate for all of that.
We need to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warmed up. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler, the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, Treats Lule State Farm Insurance. We will be back with our final few minutes right after this. Stick around. Hey, this is Terry Saul, Saltissimo. Are you in the market for a new car? Well, if so, I encourage you to do what I do. Head down to Lule's Car Connection. Lule's has been selling quality vehicles for over 30 years. Lule's brokers any new vehicle selling within dealer invoice. But check this out. Lule's has financing with most major lenders and credit unions. So do what I do. Stop by Lule's Car Connection, located at 2055 Mission Street in Salem, and tell them Saltissimo sent you. Lule's Car Connection.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
Good morning. We are back with our final few minutes. Today's guest has been Destiny Schuster, who is the owner and manager of Patient Support Services. See, I knew it'd be at the very end I'd get it right without stumbling over what you're talking about.
Good job.
And we're talking about Social Security disability. We're talking about Medicare. How long does the process take from start to finish?
Okay, so the answer, of course, as most answers are, is it depends. It depends on if you're filing for Social Security disability only or if you plan to apply for SSI as well. If you're filing for Social Security disability insurance only, you can file online and you don't have to wait for an appointment with the Social Security Administration.
If you're, oh, really?
Yeah, you can just file it online and so then you don't have to wait.
Okay.
If you're filing for Social Security Disability Insurance and SSI, you can complete the SSDI application online, but you will still need to schedule an appointment with SSA to complete the SSI application. And that can take anywhere from a week to 2 months to get an appointment. And my experience has been that most of the time it takes about 45 days. But okay. Sometimes you get lucky and get in earlier. It also depends on if you are able to submit medical evidence at the time of your initial claim appointment, and if that evidence is substantial enough that the Disability Determination Services can allow your claim upon review of that evidence. Of course, if they have to go out to other providers and get other evidence, it's going to take them a little bit longer because they have to allow the providers time to send it in as well. It also depends on if you need to complete an income and resource review once you are medically approved before having your SSI go into pay status. And if you do need to review, then did you bring all your evidence with you at the time of the appointment, such as proof of life insurance policies and their cash surrender values, values of all your vehicles, including any junker vehicles, you know, that you have sitting around in your backyard, because there's some value to that, and they have to count the value of all vehicles, whether they're running or not. Any proof of any debts that you owe on your vehicles, and your bank account information. Like I said, SSI is a needs-based program, and not only do you need to be disabled, but they need to verify that you meet the income and resource.
Will they hold that against you? Let's just say, hey, I've got a car, I'm still owed 2 years on it, I'm paying on it, and they're going to say, well, you know what? No.
Well, let's say that your car is a $10,000 car, but you still owe $9,000 on it. You provide proof of the value of the car, proof of what you owe, and they're only going to count $1,000 against you as a resource.
Okay.
You can own one car and it will be completely excluded. So if you have a car that's worth $15,000 and it's paid for, they will just write it off because you're allowed one vehicle. It doesn't matter how much it's worth. And then they'll just count the $1,000 from your second car.
Well, that one vehicle, would that be per husband, per household, husband and wife, or just...
Per household.
Okay.
Per household.
So if she's got a car and I've got a car, then they're saying, well, you got two cars there and you're paying on both of them and you don't need to.
It's not that you need to, but it's they count the value of any subsequent cars after your
first one.
And if your resources for a married individual is over $3,000, you're not going to qualify for SSI.
Okay. You are an advocate for this. Why do I need to call you? Why don't I just get online and deal with what it is and go down to the office and sit there in the lobby for 2.5 hours and wait? And why do I need you?
My answer is that you may not need me. There are a lot of people who go through the Social Security application process and they don't have any problems with it. They can contact Social Security, they can file online, they can do all of the paperwork and go through it on their own, and they may not need me. A lot of people want to use me though, and they want to use me because they want the security of knowing they've got somebody in their corner, somebody that's going to answer the phone when they call and talk to them and give them their direct number, someone that knows the process and at what point, at what stage do we need to follow up to make sure that that claim doesn't fall through the cracks. But again, I want to reiterate, the Social Security Administration, they're very intelligent people. They do generally a really good job. Sometimes things fall through the cracks, and so some people want me. Now, I will say that if you get denied at the initial claim and the reconsideration level and you're looking at going before an administrative law judge for a hearing, I would say at that point, it gets you don't necessarily need. Need is a very strong word. You can go to a hearing by yourself. I would strongly encourage you to get a representative to represent your case before the administrative law judge, because then they could put together the package. They'll write a brief. They will come up with questions that can help the judge see your case, to see the big picture of your whole case, not just looking at the medical records. They're looking at the person as well.
And you've been through this so many times that when it comes time to go sit down in front of that judge, you kind of have an idea of where he's going or she's going, and you can kind of guide your client, say, okay, this is probably the way it's going to play out.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, I do.
All right. How do you make money?
I get paid a fee that is actually set by the Social Security Administration. So the Social Security Administration has determined that representatives' fees are 25% of an individual's past due benefits, not to exceed $6,000. So I've helped people before get more than $40,000 in past due benefits, and my payment was a one-time payment of $6,000, and then they receive 100% going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I've also helped people get $2,000 in past due benefits, and my payment was $500. They got $1,500, and then they keep 100% of their checks going forward.
So who's paying you? The Social Security is paying you from that back payment there, or is the
Correct.
Individual client paying you?
Social Security pays me directly from the individual's past due benefits.
Okay.
I love it because it's a win-win.
Sure.
And that's why I do Medicare as well, is because you don't have to pay me to help you with Medicare. I just get paid directly from a commission directly from the insurance companies. And I work with several different insurance companies so that I can be more of a broker to help you get something that's going to be a good fit for you.
Who likes you?
Who likes me?
Does Social Security like you, or are they think
yeah.
you're a pain, or...
No.
Here we go again. Destiny's on the phone. Let's just deal with this. Do they appreciate what you do, or do they think you're a pain in the rear?
It depends on who you talk to. I would say overall, they do appreciate with what I do. In the Salem Social Security office, a lot of them know me because I used to work there.
Sure.
They pay attention. I'll say they pay attention when I send them something and I say, hey, I think that this person's work history qualifies as an unsuccessful work attempt, and this is why. You know, they'll pay attention to it because they know that I know my stuff. And I try to be helpful. I try to process things so that I'm not only helping my client, but I'm helping the Social Security employees because right. I know what they're going through.
Right.
I know how busy they are. And I try to be on top of things and get them the information that they need before they even have to ask for it.
Wow. We are running out of time here. I've got 1,000 more questions I can ask you. Would you come back and join us again sometime?
I would love to.
Because this is just amazing. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners have a lot of questions. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
They should call me. That's the best thing to do. Just give me a call. My number is 503-383-7724.
Okay.
That's a landline, so don't try texting me. It won't work.
Okay.
503-383-7724. You can also look me up on my website. It's patientsupportservicesusa.com. And I have a Facebook page as well, Patient Support Services.
Is there a direct email they can send you something?
Sure. They can send me an email to Destiny. That's DESTINEE at patientsupportservicesusa.com.
It's a mouthful.
It is.
Destiny, thank you very much. And again, I would love for you to come back and we can chat some more.
I would love that. Thank you, Terry.
We are just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 11 a.m. here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I would love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Holmes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.